on, Mr. Blackman. Yes.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Michael Blackman, and I am representing the appellant Gaia Group AG. This is the second time that this case has come before this Court. In June of 2011, this Court entered an order directing...
Well, I hope it's the last time. Look, I don't understand your case at all. Your concern, as I understand it, that Kahn took assets out of Flexen Corporation, put them somewhere else, and that as a result, if you win your arbitration, you won't be able to collect the arbitration judgment because Kahn has squirreled away these assets. Is that your argument?
In part, Your Honor. Originally...
Well, that part does not make sense to me. Because you don't have an arbitration award yet. If and when you get an arbitration award and Flexen Gate says, sorry, we have no assets, and you say, well, there was a fraudulent conveyance to Kahn, then you go after Kahn. Kahn is a billionaire, and you'll be able to get your judgment paid by him. But you don't have the arbitration award yet, so why are you fussing with Kahn?
Okay. When we originally brought the case, we did have an arbitration award, or almost.
Yes, but you don't have an arbitration award now.
Right.
When you get the arbitration award, if the defendant doesn't pay, then you go looking around for other sources, such as someone who received a fraudulent conveyance of the defendant's assets.
Right. And if at that time, we do, say, a couple of years from now, we drop with prejudice the case that's before the district court here, then our claim for fraudulent conveyance and the alternative claim for fraud would both lapse because of the statute of limitations.
No. Your claim for fraud hasn't arisen yet because it doesn't arise until you have a judgment. You can't go around saying that someone who takes assets out of a corporation is harming you because you might sue that corporation and discover it didn't have assets because there'd been a fraudulent conveyance.
But if that fraudulent conveyance or fraud... This...
You don't have a judgment, and so there's no harm to you yet. Until you get a judgment, you cannot be harmed by anything that Kahn does with the assets of Flexen Gate. And because you're not harmed, your cause of action hasn't arisen, so the statute of limitations hasn't begun to run.
Except there are a couple of theories under which our statute of limitations... If we had no statute of limitations problem, you're
right. Look, this is phony. Go back, finish the arbitration case. If you have trouble collecting, there are plenty of remedies.
Besides the statute of limitations, Your Honor, the other problem is that we do have a...
You don't have a statute of limitations problem because you haven't been harmed. You can't be harmed until you have trouble collecting your arbitration award, if you ever get an arbitration award.
I think that just Pat, I'll come back to the issue of how we might be harmed because the statute might well run. I think would run, but besides that, we
no,
have
no, it
a case.
Will not run. A statute of limitations doesn't start to run until there's an injury.
Come back to that in a second. Right now, Your Honor, the problem is we do have a case in Illinois. And under that case had been stayed. and because there was no reason to litigate it, as Your Honor is pointing out, until we have a judgment and a problem recovering in the arbitration. But the reason we're here today is because the stay on that case, which I agree should stay stayed and should not be litigated until we have an arbitration award and have a problem collecting it, that stay has been lifted, so that discovery is going to be conducted in that case that will then be used in the arbitration. And because discovery will be used in the arbitration, FNG has already moved in the German courts that because of the district order here, the arbitration agreement should be set aside. Because lifting the stay as to Kahn is the same as lifting it as to FNG, because these are non-severable claims, and right now you have a situation where the case exists, it will go forward, it will no longer be stayed with respect to discovery, and that discovery will unavoidably, inevitably flow into and affect the German arbitration.
So you have a gripe with an Illinois state court order?
An Illinois federal court order.
I thought you said that there was a state suit. You're talking about another federal suit or
no,
what?
No. In the district court case, in this litigation, the appeal from which we are here today,
okay.
There's a stay that this court mandated. That stay has been lifted by the district court in this case to allow discovery by Kahn. That discovery, because that case, the Kahn claims cannot be severed from the rest of the case. That's stipulated below.
No, wait. The stay lifted to permit Kahn to conduct discovery.
The district court judge, yes.
Because you're suing Kahn.
Yes.
But you shouldn't be suing Kahn because you have no cause of action against Kahn.
But right now that case exists.
It doesn't matter. You should not be suing Kahn. You are screwing up the arbitration by bringing Kahn in prematurely because you're worried that he's not going to pay a judgment, if you ever get a judgment in arbitration.
But when the case was commenced, Your Honor, it was not premature because we had an arbitration award. What's changed is the arbitration award was set aside.
That's a big change. You do not have an arbitration award. There is no reason for you to be litigating against Kahn. And if you drop your suit against Kahn, he's not going to be able to conduct discovery because there's not going to be any suit against him.
If there was a way to drop the suit against Kahn and be sure, as Your Honor is sure, that there would be no statute of limitations problems, I would agree.
I don't know where you got your statute of limitations problem.
Well, for one thing,
because there's no judgment.
Correct. But if there, let's take the fraudulent conveyance statute of limitations, the 4-year statute from the time the conveyance takes place.
You can't have a fraudulent conveyance until you have some interest in some pot of money which has now been taken out of your grasp. Well, you won't have that until you have a judgment.
Well, if you have a claim again.
I mean, it's like arguing that every time you bring a lawsuit, you can sue all the relatives of the defendant's officers on the theory that, well, maybe they'll try to the company will try to transfer money to relatives. You can't do that. There's never been a case like that.
There have been cases, Your Honor, where you bring a case, you bring an arbitration. There then is a conveyance that takes place at that time, which, taking into account your claim, would be fraudulent because it meets the standards of the statute. There's a 4-year statute of limitations. And I am advised by our bankruptcy lawyers, and I think believe it's the law, that statute is a real problem. It's a 4-year statute, and it would start to run, even though the arbitration award has been set aside and the arbitration is now reconstituted and going forward. So that is a real problem. The other problem is that when we, our first concern was that Khan and FNG had transferred assets, then we got testimony that no, the assets were not transferred. FNG never had the assets in the first place. Okay, so then there's a question as to when that cause of action for fraud would have arisen. There certainly is an argument that it would have arisen at the time that we closed the transaction in Germany, believing that we were contracting with and agreeing to arbitrate with a solvent party. So that if I had a, you know, if we had a guarantee that we knew that there was no way that we would suffer statute of limitations problems from walking away from the suit against Khan, fine. But that's not the situation. And not being the situation, we had a good solution from this court staying that proceeding. So it stayed. Nothing is happening. There's no reason to ever litigate it unless we eventually, if we don't win in the arbitration in Germany and get an award that we can't collect, that suit will get dropped because the damages we're seeking are based upon there being a shortfall in the collection. And the stay solved the problem and preserved things fine. What's happened is that the stay has been lifted to allow Khan, and because it's an inseparable, agreed stipulated to be non-severable, FNG to conduct discovery. And that discovery, since the same counsel are representing FNG in the lawsuit and in the arbitration, that discovery will be used in the arbitration. And not only do the cases say...
I don't understand. How is that discovery... If Khan is just seeking discovery with regard to your potential fraudulent conveyance claim, how does that bear on the arbitration?
Because the claims against Khan were both fraud and fraudulent conveyance and piercing. Khan then raised as defenses, and his answer and defenses, 11 affirmative defenses, are in the record, and those defenses all raise issues, properly or not, I think not, all of the issues that are in the arbitration. He raises as a defense that GEA breached the contract for the sale of its subsidiary to FNG. He raises as defenses that GEA misled FNG as to...
Well, are you saying that these are defenses unrelated to fraudulent conveyance?
And fraud. I mean, Your Honor keeps saying fraudulent conveyance and fraud. I think that they are unrelated, but they are defenses that he's asserted, and that it's absolutely certain they were going to be seeking discovery with respect to. In addition,
well,
are these issues the same in the arbitration as in the? Is in the judicial proceeding?
The defenses that Khan has raised are the same, overlap in almost entirely.
That was not the case in the first arbitration. Is that right?
No, those defenses always overlap.
What's the difference between this arbitration and the other one?
Yeah, what happened, Your Honor, is we brought a... these claims for fraud and fraudulent conveyance in Illinois to protect what was then imminent or already achieved arbitration award. FNG counterclaimed, asserting all the counterclaims that it had made in the arbitration, and Khan asserted defenses that overlapped those counterclaims and overlapped all of the issues in the arbitration. In addition to that, in the arbitration, there is a claim that by GEA, that the breach that FNG did of the contract was tortious because they also misled us, and the false representations that are part of that misleading claim, that tort claim, are the same misrepresentations as are involved in our fraud claim against Khan and FNG in the litigation. So the answer is that, particularly because of the counterclaims, particularly because of the defenses, those defenses cover everything in the arbitration.
Well, I was under the impression that fraud was not an issue in the original arbitration, but it is now. Is that right?
Well, we're not asserting a fraud claim in the arbitration, but there is a tort claim that for a German equivalent of willful breach that has as a factual predicate the same misrepresentations. But the problem is it goes beyond the misrepresentations because the scope of the defenses is going to bring everything in issue. So we're going to have discovery, and Kahn's going to be able to take depositions with the FNG lawyer sitting there because it's not.
Well, I thought your concern was about evidentiary rulings in the judicial proceeding affecting the arbitration.
That is also a concern. The first concern is that we're going to. The concern which is highlighted by the briefs that FNG has filed in the German state court, maybe that was where I said state, the German appeals court, if you will, where they have moved to have the arbitration agreement set aside based on the discovery order here. So that's one concern, that discovery will undermine and destroy the party's agreement. Agreed upon method of adjudicating these claims. The other thing is you're going to have discovery rulings if this court doesn't reverse the district court on discovery that Kahn is going to be pressing in the beginning of the new year. In the arbitration panel is now constituted. The defense and the statement of claim has been filed, and the answer is going to be filed in early February. With all the evidence attached to it. Then on February 20th, there's going to be the case management conference, which is going to consider everything in the arbitration, including requests for the production of documents. So you're going to have two jurisdictions in two different places, the Illinois District Court and the arbitration, ruling on discovery issues, if you will, at the same time. That certainly could lead to and is likely to lead to inconsistent results with respect to those discovery issues. So that is another concern, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Blackman. Mr. Frederick.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The simplest way for this Court to decide this case is to rule that the petition for mandamus has not been satisfied because the extraordinary remedy of mandamus is not appropriate.
What about the statute of limitations issue? What is your view on that?
I agree with your positing of the question that if the case is only about collection, then there is a different kind of statute of limitations analysis that would ensue. They, in their original complaint, they didn't even mention the arbitration. They brought fraud claims and fraudulent conveyance claims and alter ego claims against Mr. Kahn. Those have different statutes of limitations, and I have not heard them to say they are withdrawing those claims. Mr. Kahn has a right to defend himself against the non-arbitrable claims, and that is what the district court allowed to happen. The district court understood that once the first arbitration had ended and this lawsuit was continuing on, that Mr. Kahn had a right and a duty to defend himself, and the stay was lifted only to allow discovery as to the non-arbitrable claims. And that's all that should happen now. There is no basis in jurisdiction for this court under the Federal Arbitration Act because this is not a Section 3, Section 16 situation where the appeal is based on a stay for arbitrable claims. And as this court has held, when there are a mixture of arbitrable and non-arbitrable claims, it's up to the district court's discretion as to allow litigation as to the non-arbitrable claims. And that's all the district court did here. Now, it is important to note that the facts that underlie this transaction that Gaia complains about are now 10 years old. And the district court, which is in the best position to recognize the staleness of claims, the witnesses who may have left companies, and in this case, the key witnesses here for Gaia, the CEO, the CFO, the general counsel, the investment bankers, are no longer on the scene. And so in order for Mr. Khan to defend himself as a successful businessman from very serious fraud claims, he surely is entitled to be able to take protective discovery. The argument on the other side is that somehow this is going to be all documentary is false. Judge Cudahy, you asked in the first arbitration whether there were fraud claims. There were not. These were breach of contract claims that had been brought. So the notion that the record from the first arbitration somehow allows Mr. Khan, who was not a party to the arbitration agreement, was not a party to that arbitration, somehow gets something in that transactional record to be able to defend himself against very different causes of action is simply not true.
Well, when you say the non-arbitrable claims, the fraud and so on, are they all about his removing the allegation that he improperly removed assets from FlexEngage?
No. They also allege that Mr. Khan was involved in misrepresentations that fraudulently induced them into doing the transaction, and that he mishandled assets in a way that allows him to be viewed as the alter ego of FlexEngage, which I think is a very different kind of charge than what they have asserted in open court here with respect to what happens after the transaction failed. And the transaction failed. I mean, there is a perfectly disputed issue as to the reason behind that failure, because the FlexEngage side of the story, as reflected in its counterclaims, is that 50 million euros disappeared from the valuation of the target company during the period while they were trying to figure out how to close it. So it is not a case where there's a one-sided story here. There are two sophisticated businesses that have clashing stories. The problem is successful business people do move on in life. And if Mr. Khan, who has a right to defend himself, doesn't get an opportunity to find witnesses, take their testimony on fraud allegations that are inherently testimonial, not documentary, he's compromised his ability to defend himself when and if this case ever does get off the ground. And the district court properly recognized that. And that is not something in making that limited lift of the stay, something that requires the extraordinary remedy of a mandamus. And that's the only jurisdictional basis on which you have to review the district court's order in this case.
Well, Mr. Bleckman says that you're going to use what you get in discovery in the arbitration proceeding.
Well, I would say to that, the original complaint that they filed, which didn't even mention arbitration, was promptly accompanied by discovery requests and a protective order that they got the judge to sign that allowed discovery in the underlying district court proceedings to be used in the arbitration in Germany. Now they've done a complete 180 flip. And they are afraid now to have the arbitration panel in Germany decide the cases on the basis of facts. The problem, though, with their theory is that nothing in allowing discovery for Mr. Khan, who is not a party to that arbitration and was not a party to the arbitration agreement, to defend himself, precludes the arbitration panel from deciding whether or not to allow any of that discovery in. It's still up to the arbitration panel to have superintendence over its own proceedings. And nothing that we've suggested or that the district court ordered here interferes one jot with the arbitration panel's control over its own proceedings.
Well, what would be an example of something you might find in discovery that you would think germane to the arbitration?
For Mr. Khan, I'm not sure anything would, because he's talking about personal defenses that are unique to him. I mean, here we're talking about what misrepresentations did he allegedly make and what reliance did particular business people on the other side take actions in reliance on those particular statements. Those are very personal, testimonial-type situations that I think the district court...
That relate to the breach of contract, which is the base of the arbitration?
It is conceivable that it...
representations and contractual negotiations.
Sure, and I don't have a brief here to argue that there's no relevance, but I don't represent FlexEngage here. I represent Mr. Khan here, and how the FlexEngage lawyers and how they work that out with Gaia in terms of what should be allowed in the arbitration and not is something for them to fight over in Germany in front of the German arbitration panel. I mean, my task...
Why is mandamus the only available remedy. What's the matter with Section 3 and 16?
Because these are not claims that are arbitrable claims, and under Section 3, for there to be a stay, the claims have to be arbitrable. Because Mr. Khan is not a party to the arbitration agreement, and because he is not a party in the arbitration, these are classically non-arbitrable claims within this court's decisions in Volkswagen and IDS and others. And because these are not arbitrable claims that arise under an arbitration agreement, Section 16 does not operate to provide an automatic appeal. And so, therefore, the only basis on which this court has had its jurisdiction invoked is the petition for mandamus. They didn't ask for an interlocutory appeal. They didn't ask for a motion to vacate or amend the prior mandate. The only basis on which they invoked jurisdiction were the two, Section 16 of the FAA, which doesn't apply, and the petition for mandamus, which the standards of which have not been met. Mm-hmm. If the court has nothing further, we would submit.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Frederick. Mr. Bleckman, we'll give you – his time expired, so we'll give you a minute or two.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. First, I think that what we heard from counsel is nothing to say that there's no statute of limitations issue. He hasn't said that Khan is not going to be raising statute of limitations issues with respect to our fraud claim. To the contrary, he's been saying that he needs discovery because memories fade, it's time that these events took place a long time ago, which are all arguments that I think we're going to be...
He says that you brought some, that some of your claims, like misrepresentation and alter ego, they're not fraudulent conveyance. They're and they could well affect the breach of contract suit.
Yes, that's what I've been saying from the beginning, Your Honor. We didn't just bring a fraudulent conveyance action in Illinois. We brought fraudulent conveyance because there was some evidence that assets were no longer...
I don't understand your fraudulent conveyance and your statute of limitations argument at all. But I can see how if... So you have this German arbitration, which is about breach of contract, and but you think you also have tort claims against Khan... related to the breach of contract, and you file them, and that's fine. And then discovery proceeds, and as Mr. Frederick said, whether the fruits of the discovery are usable in the arbitration proceeding in Germany, that's for the Germans to decide, the arbitrators, whoever they are. So what's wrong with that argument?
What's wrong with that argument is that's always true in cases where discovery is allowed in this country, that in a claim that is arbitrable, because in all of those the cases Suarez and the
he says it's not arbitrable. His alter ego and misrepresentations, he says they're separate torts. They're not. I mean, they're torts. They're not arbitrable because he wasn't a party to the arbitration. He wasn't a party to the arbitration, to the clause of the contract that requires arbitration. So. He can bring these, what's the problem? They're separate claims.
But the problem is, Your Honor, is that the claim, our claims and the counterclaims of FNG are arbitrable. This Court's already ruled that. And they're clearly covered.
Wait, I didn't state it right. You're bringing these tort claims, right? These are... You're bringing these tort claims. You sued him in the
Illinois court.
You have these tort claims, and they're not arbitrable. That's why you're able to bring them here as a litigation. So if you bring those claims, why can't he have discovery? I don't understand.
Because while we brought claims that were non-arbitrable and were aimed at collecting an arbitration award, which we thought was imminent at the time, the counterclaims and the defenses that were brought, particularly Khan's defenses, then implicated everything in the arbitration. For example, I'm just looking at his answer, which is in the record. His 11th affirmative defense is Gaia breached the purchase agreement by, among other things, causing assets to be stripped. Council mentioned that $15 million just now, 15 million euros disappeared, so that there's another side to the story. That story that there's another side to is what's the subject of the arbitration.
No, it's, well, but it's also germane. So if you sue him and you claim that he, you know, defrauded you at the time of the contract, not the current, not the fraudulent conveyance. Well, clearly, one way of responding is to say, well, actually, the fraud is Gaia. Gaia, you know, made all this money disappear. That was the problem. Well, what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that?
If you're not content with your arbitration proceeding, and you start bringing tort cases that are closely related, of course it's going to spill into the arbitration.
We are content with our arbitration proceeding. The claims we brought in Illinois were not closely related. They were aimed at preventing...
But they have to be closely related. If you're you're charging him with misrepresentations, what are those misrepresentations? When did they occur?
The misrepresentations occurred during when we were told that FNG had all these assets. So we entered into an agreement, including an arbitration agreement, with FNG, and we brought this claim in Illinois, where the damages we're seeking are limited to any shortfall that we're able to recover in the arbitration, because.
Well, that certainly ties the suit to the arbitration when your damages claim depends on what you get in the arbitration.
I'm sorry, what's the beginning of your second question?
Well, you've tied your Illinois suit to the arbitration by making your damages in the suit depend on what you get in the arbitration.
Well, they do, and because it doesn't. It means in the nature of a collection matter. The merits.
Well, that's separate. That's the business about how you're worried that he's taking assets away that you need to satisfy your hypothetical arbitration judgment. But you have other claims which aren't tied, which aren't about the fraudulent conveyance. It's about conduct he engaged in earlier, isn't it?
No. The reason we have the alternative claims is we originally. We're told things that made our officers fear that assets had been transferred out, plants, things
so
that
this
made...
Is all the fraudulent conveyance? I don't
all the, this was the fraudulent conveyance fear. Then we had a proceeding in Canada to find out about the...
Look, so what is there besides fraudulent conveyance, whether prospective or accomplished or what? What else are you charging...
Okay,
if
I can finish the end of the sentence, Your Honor, I was about to explain.
No, I don't want to hear about Canada.
No, I won't mention Canada, Your Honor.
What are you charging him besides taking assets out that you'll need if you win a generous arbitration award?
Well, since his representative testified that no, we didn't transfer assets out, those assets we told you we had, we didn't have in the first place, it appeared to us that there's two alternatives. Either we were defrauded because
fraudulent... What's the first place, when you negotiate the contract?
Yes, at the time he made representations as to what assets FNG had. So either those, if they said...
So you have a separate tort that he induced you to enter the contract by misrepresenting the assets of the contracting party?
The alternative claims are...
No, is that what you're talking about?
Yes, we're talking about that you defrauded us into entering into an agreement with someone we thought was judgment-proof, and either they were either they had assets...
Contract. Okay, that's a separate tortious claim. If you sue Khan for that, he defends and he can get discovery.
First of all, that claim... is only live, only becomes relevant, as Your Honor stated at the outset, if there's a shortfall.
If the arbitration goes your way.
Pardon me?
If the arbitration goes your way, then it becomes alive.
If the arbitration If we win the arbitration, it goes away if we don't win the arbitration,
right?
Or we win and we collect.
Right.
In either of those cases, there's nothing to decide in the Illinois case.
Okay. Well, thank you. We'll have to move on. So thank you. I'm sorry.
I get your response on the application of Section 3 and 16.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that the cases are clear that where you have that if, for example, the stay had been lifted as to FNG to let FNG take discovery, which it could use in the arbitration, that would violate Section 3. I think that the cases are clear on that. Here, where Kahn is taking the discovery, but in an inseparable, what's stipulated to be a non-severable litigation with FNG, the effect is identical. Because there'll be a deposition, Kahn's counsel will be asking questions, FNG's counsel, who are the same in the litigation and the arbitration, will be there cross-examining. So the effect is identical to lifting the stay as to FNG itself. So I think that if that violates Section 3, in the cases I think make it clear it does, then in this particular case, because of the non-severability of the claims and the overlapping nature of the claims and the inseparability of the claims, it violates Section 3 as well. But certainly, in addition to Section 3, it's also an abuse of discretion to allow, and a subject of mandamus, which is what the Suarez case held, to allow that kind of discovery.
What if the German arbitration panel, suppose we, you know, the discovery goes forward, they find all kinds of stuff. They go to the arbitration panel. They say, look, we found all this interesting stuff that bears on the breach of contract. And suppose the German arbitrators say, yeah, that's very interesting stuff. We're interested. We'll you know, give it appropriate weight. What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with
that? That's their business. You agree to arbitrate. You're subject to the German rules. German arbitrators say, fine, bring lawsuits all over the world, and we're happy to look at your discovery results. Why is that our business?
What's wrong with that, I think, is stated, among other places, in these quotes we've given in our reply brief on page 15 and in our motion for judicial notice, that FNG has made to the German appeal court that it warrants vitiating, voiding the whole arbitration agreement. Because when you agree to arbitration, you agree, as this court had observed in Cigna, to the processes of arbitration, which means that facts are developed and discovered not through discovery in a federal rules way, but by the arbitrators in arbitral proceedings.
Look, you sign an agreement that allows arbitration in Germany. When you buy with that the German court system, that's your deal. If the Germans want this discovery, don't want this discovery, then you're out of luck. Anyway, we have to move on. So thank you very much to Mr. Blechman and Mr. Frederick. And our next case.